Friends, welcome. It's good to see so many here. I'm Ruth, I chair the Faith and Order Reference Group, so you'll see me pop up at various points today and tomorrow and say this is about to happen. But well done on getting here. I gather some folk have not made it due to adverse travelling, so we're hoping some may still join us. But it's good to be here, and my first introduction is to say welcome to Bob, who had a slightly more demanding journey than he'd hoped, I think, and who's going to lead us through our opening prayers and reflection.
Thank you.
Can I add my my welcome and thanks to everyone who is here and who's made a significant effort this morning? I know the trains from there's flooding at Berwick, and all the trains coming in from the east are all elsewhere. I'd like to begin just by saying reading the reflection and prayer from this next year's Week of Prayer for Christian Unity materials. They really are brilliant materials. If you haven't got them, then do we have copies?
There are some order forms with some.
There are order forms, various things outside, but they really are. It's a brilliant resource. So I'm going to read one of the reflections and prayers for one of the days. And then I'd like just to offer a very brief reflection as we begin. This is a reflection called Remember. To linger overlong in the haze of time, so stifling the past in nostalgia or blame-fumed fury, enshrouds tomb-like as with salt, moments otherwise free to soar. But to reimagine the past, leaning deep into memory, so freeing the now to birth the not yet, to draw out flavours of the future as with salt, to taste and to see goodness. This is how it is to remember. So liberating God, we look back in nostalgia, but often frozen to the spot, unable to move. Free us to travel with you into the future, that learning from and treasuring the past, we may journey with you, hand to the plough, into the transformation of life in you. Amen.
Amen.
I get quite excited about that whole sense of leaning into the past, but actually using that leaning in as a springboard into what is now and is yet to come. And that's been quite a lot to do with quite a deep personal journey that I've been undertaking over the last 3 or 4 years. That in fact, you know, has meant me changing my tradition and being received into the Catholic Church as a lay person recently. I want to start with a couple of reflections from those who have, in some senses, been quite, accompaniers, you know, with me through some of this. The first is to offer a couple of quotations from Thomas Merton. When he says about ecumenism, I will be a better Catholic not if I can refute every shade of Protestantism, but if I can confirm the truth in it and still go further. So too with Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists. This does not mean syncretism, indifferentism, the vapid and careless friendliness that accepts everything by thinking of nothing. There is much that one can affirm and accept, but first, one must see yes where one really can. If I affirm myself as a Catholic merely by denying all that is Muslim, Jewish, Protestant, Hindu, Buddhist, etc., in the end, I will find that there is not much left for me to affirm as a Catholic, and certainly no breath of the Spirit with which to affirm it. The other quotation that I wanted to read to you is from one of the great 20th century theologians, who was one of the great fathers of the Second Vatican Council, Yves Congar. And in a beautiful little book called 50 Years of Catholic Theology, Conversations with Yves Congar, this is one of the things that he says. It's a wee bit long, but it's a good quote. Here, I would want to protest against a certain ecclesiological defeatism, a certain lack of ambition. So I'm very happy to quote a comment by Max Thurian in connection with baptism, Eucharist, and ministry, which is a perfect example of what I say elsewhere, and I think it's appropriate to be quoted in the context of what we're thinking about today. Each church reads this text in accordance with its own tradition and does not ask itself very hard whether it should not go beyond this confessional historical tradition in order to arrive at a common and deeper source. Before going into detail, there is one question that we should all ask ourselves. Do we really want unity? One sometimes has the impression that ecumenism began in 1910 or 1926, and that we have had this experience for more than 50 years. The Catholic Church has got on the train during the journey, and now we have to take note of this important passenger. But I sometimes get the impression that we are sitting in this very comfortable train. Perhaps we have got to the dining car and so on. Fine, but are we really travelling towards visible unity? Or are we still going to be quite happy for a long time to be travelling side by side, acknowledging our friendship, an immense friendship, which is born of these contacts, these relationships? So Thurian is asking here whether we are really looking for unity. In its various declarations, in particular the Nairobi Declaration, this is of course some of the historical ones, which is one of the strongest, and more recently in the Vancouver Declaration. The World Council is formally pronouncing that it wants visible unity. And basically this concept of conciliar unity, perhaps somewhat obscure and debatable, but in the end most eloquent, is almost what we understand by the communion of local churches in an absolute unity of profound faith, sacramentality and ministry. But again, Congar asks, do we really want unity? Now, one of the things I want just to finish with is to go back to Thomas Merton. And in asking that question, do we really, really want unity, is to say, where is it that we begin? And for me, again, this has been an important re-engagement about how we begin, not in terms of our theological enterprise in our heads, but actually in our hearts, and we note what it is that God is saying to us in this. So I finish with this quote again from Merton. It's in the context of contemplation. Contemplation is about knowing God in an entirely new way. Not by instruction, but by experience. It requires listening to God in silence, but it is hearing without hearing, seeing without seeing, knowing without knowing. Those who take the risk of discovering what it means to be alone with the alone will perceive God as light and love and life. What matters, therefore, is not what we do, but what we receive. It is no longer a question of knowing about God, but of knowing God. It is to be possessed in the depths of our being by a realization of God and of ourselves in God, and of all humankind with ourselves in God. It's that realization that we experience God. We don't simply think about God or engage with God in our intellects, but also in our hearts and in our guts in many ways. And I hope that we'll be able to do that today and over the next 24 hours, to have all kinds of thoughts, to share our thoughts, but also to be touched in a really quite deep and profound way by listening to one another, but also listening to what the Spirit is saying to us here in this place at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. I'm Peter Colwell, CTBI staff. Just want to say something about this conference, why it's happening, and just to talk you through the programme a little bit. Just over a year ago, we held a consultation on the International Faith and Order Commission's document for Church Towards a Common Vision. And that, the purpose of that was to bring the churches together to reflect on responses that had been made or responses that were in the process of being written to that document. And so churches from across Britain and Ireland gathered highly in England. And one of the outcomes of that was a need to continue the conversation, but to have it, to have a broader constituency engaged with that. And it was felt that a conference to explore particularly what we mean by visible unity. Because it was clear in the consultation that amongst our member churches, there were differing understandings of what it means to talk about unity, visible unity, and even whether visible unity is still the goal of the ecumenical movement. And so CTBI was asked to arrange a conference. And so a working group, a planning group, has been working at that, mastering the meeting by telephone, conference calls, not always easy, but we managed that. So first of all, I want to say a big thank you to those who've been involved in the planning of this. And I also want to say thank you, if I don't get the chance to say it before the end of the conference, thank you Natasha, who's done so much of the practical arrangements and chasing me about all sorts of things. So I'm offering my thanks to her. So here we are. We've arrived at the conference. So I'm delighted that so many are here. Or are even on their way. In fact, it's one of those occasions when you think, how many places shall we provisionally book? And I think we started off at 40, and then it went up to 50, and then it went up to 60, and I think the actual count of people who registered was 72. And that's a wonderful thing in planning any kind of ecumenical conference. And I hope that's a positive sign. So before we look at the programme, just a few practical matters. It's our practice to record the presentations, an audio. So if any of you are presenting who would rather we didn't record and put that on the website, you just speak to me or Natasha and we'll make sure it doesn't happen. And please feel free to use social media. If you would like to use Twitter, we're suggesting the hashtag is called2be1. Called2be1. So if we can just turn to the programme. In a few moments, we're going to have really what is a gentle introduction to our subject. So rather than head straight on into presentations, we're going to spend some time talking to one another, introducing ourselves to one another in different ways, and saying something of the context to which we come, and also to share what some of our hopes and expectations might be for this 24 hours we're spending together. And then I'm also stressing that this is not merely, we're not here simply to receive information, but we are here to share and reflect together. As I think this is quite a diverse group in terms of context and experience that we gather. Then after lunch, we're going to begin by hearing from people from local ecumenical contexts. When we were talking about this in the planning group, we realised that whenever we have the conversation about ecumenism, invariably the conversation starts with the local experience. And that's really important. So we felt we ought to start there. It's also because one of the things that I think that I experience and Bob experiences and many experience is that when we talk to some people in positions of leadership in the church, we often hear the message that the week of prayer for Christian unity, which is where we began, why do that when local ecumenism is not vibrant anymore? Praying together isn't what it's about, it's action together. But actually, my experience, whenever I'm asked to go to speak to a local church together group, is there's a lot of vibrant energy around locally. And so we wanted to try and capture something about it. You will have your own stories to tell, but we have three particular contexts, and we think they're very different stories to tell. So we will hear that, and that's our starting point for our conversation. And then after our tea break, we're delighted and honoured to have our first keynote speaker, Professor Grace Davey, who's going to talk about religion in modern Britain and the implications for unity. And we hope that as Grace is offering her expertise and experience into our gathering, we might reflect on the local experience we have heard about and shared. And then we're going to then turn to some of the developments, what we call structural and institutional ecumenism. So some of the developments in Wales, in Scotland, and in Ireland. We're going to close that session with a reflection from David Cornick, the General Secretary of Churches Together in England, a reflection on John's Gospel, which arises from some of the work that he did on his sabbatical. David's on his way. He hopes to be here. I'm sure he'll be here. And then on the second day, turning to ecclesiology and theology, and then our second keynote speaker, who is on his way back to the United States, where he has been lecturing, Stephen Holmes from St Andrews. So that's the sort of structure of the conference. It's quite a mixed and varied menu that we're offering.
Is this the only room, Peter?
Yes, it is.
I'm right in front of
everybody. So
we close this.
So what we'd like you to do now is to form yourself into groups of four or five, and for the next sort of 15 minutes, just introduce yourself to one another and talk about some of the context that you come from, particularly in relation to unity concerns and ecumenism. So if you can just do that for a quarter of an hour, please.